You're listening to Workplace Perspective, an employment law podcast raising the bar at workplaces everywhere. Workplace Perspective is a regular podcast series for employers and employees focusing on education, training, and the law to help organizations of all sizes develop and maintain successful workplace relationships. The opinions expressed by guests on Workplace Perspective are their own and should not be considered legal advice. And now, here's your host, Teresa McQueen.
Thank you, James, and welcome everyone to Workplace Perspective, where we are striving to raise the bar at workplaces everywhere. Today, we're talking with employment law attorney Connie Chen about the recent U.S. Supreme Court decision in the Viking River Cruises, Inc. v. Moriana case. Connie is a principal in the Los Angeles, California offices of Jackson Lewis PC, and she will be sharing her insights on the impact of the Viking River case and what's next for employers. It's going to be a great show. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Workplace Perspective has a new website. Visit us at www.workplaceperspective.com. Check out our new look, including our featured guests and archive sections. Share us with your friends and colleagues to help us continue to raise the bar at workplaces everywhere.
Welcome back to our listeners and welcome back to Workplace Perspective, Connie Chen.
Hi there, Teresa. It's great to be with you today.
Thank you so much for joining us. Once again, last time you were on the show, we were talking about COVID issues. Not doing that today, thank goodness.
No, although the issues still abound, unfortunately.
Yes. Other issues, other pressing issues. Well, before we get started, why don't you remind our listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So as you noted, I'm a principal in the Los Angeles office of Jackson Lewis, PC. I'm a management side employment lawyer. I handle all sorts of workplace disputes on behalf of companies of all sizes across various industries. Things like harassment and discrimination, and retaliation claims to wage and hour disputes. I also provide day-to-day advice and counseling to help companies stay in compliance with all the California laws out there and try to minimize the risk of litigation.
Awesome. All right. So let's jump into it. Why don't we start by you telling our listeners a little bit about why it is we're talking about this case and why they should care?
Sure. So just a couple of weeks ago, on June 15th, 2022, the United States Supreme Court issued a long-awaited opinion amongst employment circles called Viking River Cruises, Inc. versus Moriana. And the reason we were eagerly anticipating this decision, at least from the employer side, is because it potentially allows employers to reduce the potential exposure to TAGA actions and TAGA liability, which have proliferated throughout the state since 2004 when the law was passed.
Pause right there and just give a quick shout out to what TAGA is.
Sure. So for those of you who have not had the pleasure of dealing with a TAGA claim, TAGA stands for the Private Attorneys General Act of 2004. It's codified in California's labor code, starting in section 2698. Basically, what TAGA does is it provides employees with a private right of action against an employer to collect civil penalties on behalf of the state's labor and workforce development agency, what we refer to as the LWDA, for violations of the labor code. So it an employee essentially is authorized under the statute to act as an agent or a proxy of the LWDA and bring claims on behalf of the individual employee as well as other employees for issues like, alleged unpaid overtime, meal and rest break violations, wage statement violations, late payment of wages upon termination, things like that. And because they can bring these claims on what we refer to as a representative basis, and because of the penalties that attach to any proven violations, it does create significant exposure on top of, the claims that can be brought in a typical class action. So you have, in a regular wage and hour class action, you have, you're dealing with claims arising out of the labor code statutes themselves. Under PAGA, you have an additional mechanism for seeking penalties on top of whatever damages may arise from those underlying statutory violations.
Lovely synopsis, perfect synopsis. Then let's talk a little bit about how PAGA and the arbitration issues in Viking River sort of intersect and impact our employer listeners.
Before Viking River, there was a significant California Supreme Court decision in a case called Iskanian versus CLS Transportation Los Angeles LLC. That decision came out in 2014. And that case was significant because the California Supreme Court found that while employees could waive the right to bring class actions through arbitration agreements that they enter into with their employers, they could not waive the right to bring representative PAGA actions through those same arbitration agreements. And the reason the California Supreme Court made that distinction was because it found PAGA is aimed to address disputes between an employer and the state LWGA versus a private dispute between the employer and the employee. Because remember, the employees are acting as a proxy of the state or an agent of the state if they bring a claim under PAGA. And the California Supreme Court further held that this was not contrary to the Federal Arbitration Act because the FAA aims to promote the resolution of private disputes in arbitration, whereas other claims deal with disputes not between private parties, but again, between the state agency, the LWDA, and the employer. And so after this issue, or after this decision came out, kind of, it was the controlling law in California for quite some time, we saw PAGA claims, you know, proliferate because even though you have this arbitration agreement that might limit the exposure to class actions, you still have this PAGA claim, and PAGA claims are not subject to the same class certification requirements that class actions have. There's other aspects to PAGA that are unique and distinct from class actions that, you know, make them costly and time consuming to defend.
As an understatement. But I, you know, so the idea being that, you know, of course, employers can manage their risk of litigation by having employees enter into these arbitration agreements that say you're going to waive your right to have your case heard in court. We're going to go to private arbitration. But then there's the carve out for the PAGA actions, for the representative actions. And I always kept it straight in my head. Part of that analysis too originally was because the state wasn't party to the arbitration agreement, because they weren't involved in the arbitration agreement, they couldn't be held to be participate in the art. And yeah, because they're part of the PAGA action, there was a party left out of the contract. Okay, so then let's focus a little more then on what actually did Viking River, why is it so important to everybody?
Yeah, so employers have been attempting to seek U.S. Supreme Court review of the Iskanian decision for quite some time. And up until Viking River, the Supreme Court has basically denied the petitions for review and refused to take on the case. And once they agreed to review Viking River, employers became hopeful that they would resolve the decision in the employer's favor. And my take on Viking River is the decision is a little bit of a mixed bag. It's not quite the slam dunk that I think the employer side and the defense bar was hoping for, but it does make an important distinction that could potentially significantly limit the exposure to PAGA actions if the arbitration agreement is drafted correctly.
Awesome. All right, we're going to get the signal. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, more of Connie's thoughts on the Viking River case. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Take a step toward bringing our country and community together. Start a meaningful conversation at lovehasnolabels.com/onesmallstep. A message from StoryCorps, Love Has No Labels, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone. We are talking with employment law attorney Connie Chen about the recent U.S. Supreme Court case of Viking River Cruises v. Moriana and its impact on the PAGA landscape. So you started to speak about the impacts. So let's keep going with that.
Okay, so just to quickly sum up the Supreme Court decisions in Viking River, that case involved a company that sells voyages on a leading ocean and river cruise line. The employee there was named Andrew Moriana, and she worked for Viking as a sales representative in California for about a year. Before beginning her employment, she signed an arbitration agreement in which she agreed to resolve all future employment-related disputes with Viking River through private bilateral arbitration. And the arbitration agreement stated that it applied to any dispute arising out of or relating to her employment and included a provision in which she agreed to pursue any employment-related claims on an individual basis only and not seek to bring any class, collective, or representative PAGA claims. And it's important to note that because of the nature of Viking River's business, the Federal Arbitration Act applied to the arbitration agreement that Moriana signed. And again, the FAA provides for the facilitation of private dispute resolution through arbitration. So it's an act that favors arbitration. And what the U.S. Supreme Court held a few weeks ago on June 15th was that the Iskanian decision that we just spoke about was partially correct in that the FAA does not require a wholesale representative action waiver. So basically, employers still can't require employees to waive their rights to bring a PAGA claim altogether. However, the U.S. Supreme Court disagreed with the California Supreme Court in Iskanian to the extent that Iskanian held that PAGA claims are not divisible between an employee's individual PAGA claim and the representative portion of the PAGA claim on behalf of other aggrieved employees. And under the FAA, the employer cannot be forced to arbitrate both an individual PAGA claim and the PAGA claims of other alleged employees unless there's been an express agreement to do so, which in Moriana's case, there was not. And so the result was that Moriana's claim following Viking River needs to be resolved through individual arbitration. And as for the representative action portion of the claim, the court found that, well, since Moriana's individual claim was in arbitration, she really had no standing to pursue those other claims in state court. And so those have to be dismissed because they're, and this portion of the court's ruling is significant and can lead to developments down the road, which we'll talk about. But basically, the U.S. Supreme Court found that there does not appear to be a mechanism in PAGA that gives the PAGA plaintiff statutory standing to assert the representative claim if the individual claim has to be separately resolved in arbitration.
Does that allow the plaintiff's bar to plaintiff shop? To sort of discontinue shopping? So if this individual doesn't work with this individual, we keep trying, or will it continue to roll forward with the same employer if the employer has arbitration agreements with all its employees?
A lot of times I've had cases where we present the other side with a valid signed enforceable arbitration agreement, and they will either stipulate to dismiss the class claim or not the PAGA claim up until now, but or they would just try to find another employee. It kind of depends. But as I mentioned before, the impact of Viking River doesn't necessarily mean you can never bring a representative PAGA claim. And there were certain nuances in the language of the U.S. Supreme Court decisions that, leaves things a little bit uncertain in the future. And there's still some issues that I anticipate will need to be resolved. So for instance, the majority opinion in Viking River, you know, they use very specific language in terms of quote unquote, but as we see it, PAGA provides no mechanism to enable a court to adjudicate non-individual PAGA claims once the individual claim has been committed to a separate proceeding. So that is essentially the U.S. Supreme Court's interpretation of the PAGA statutory mechanism, which if you take a look at Justice Sotomayor's concurring opinion, she notes expressly, but of course, if this court's understanding is of state law is wrong, California courts in an appropriate case will have the last word. Alternatively, if the court's understanding is right, the California legislature is still free to modify the scope of statutory standing under PAGA. And so we anticipate that employees and their advocates will be exploring those avenues seeing how things play out in the California state courts and the California legislature based on those comments.
I always love when they give opinions like that. Here's our opinion, but here's how you're going to get around it. If you don't like it, here's how you can go around and fix it.
Essentially. And so, you know, this decision just came out a couple of weeks ago. I mean, obviously, it remains to be seen how that's going to play out over the next few months and years even.
Yeah. And then there's some other aspects, you know, out there that can impact it as well, right? There's AB 51. It didn't manage to resolve everything that's hanging out there.
Correct. And so, you know, a lot of clients have already reached out to, you know, on the, like literally the day of the decision. It's like, so what do we do now? You know, are we free or are we safe or what do we do now? Or I don't have arbitration agreements. Should I start having everyone sign them? Or, what are our options? What should employers be doing? And you mentioned AB 51, which is pending California legislation that prohibits employers from mandating or forcing employees to sign arbitration agreements, you know, regardless of whether they contain any class or representative action waivers. If you can't, under AB 51, employers are not supposed to mandate that employees enter into these private arbitration agreements. Otherwise, the employers could be subject to civil actions, penalties under PAGA, misdemeanor liability, fines, things of that nature. The viability of that legislation is currently under review by the Ninth Circuit. They had reserved their decision about whether to grant the petition to review their decision in that case until after Viking River had been issued. And so we're still waiting to hear from the Ninth Circuit about what they plan to do with the challenge to AB 51, which adds another wrinkle to, you know, the what employers should be doing in light of the Viking River decision. But what we're recommending is, you know, if you don't have an arbitration agreement, you could certainly consider implementing them now, even in light of AB 51, because enforcement of that statute has been enjoined pending the Ninth Circuit's decision about whether to grant review. It's not a one-size-fits-all or a bright-line standard. You should still, you know, speak with employment counsel to discuss the pros and cons of arbitration in general, of rolling out these new arbitration agreements in light of AB 51. You know, discuss the logistics and the administration aspects of rolling out arbitration agreements and making sure that if you do proceed with preparing one, that it meets all the requirements for enforceability, so that you're not subject to an attack on your arbitration agreement after you've gone through the effort of rolling it out, because we do anticipate many more challenges to the enforceability of arbitration agreements and the validity of the class and representative action waivers in light of Viking River.
I think that's a good point. And there was a lot of good points in there. But let's talk about what makes a good arbitration agreement. So if you're, you know, if you're going to go for it and try to limit liability, And as we kind of talked about when we preparing for the show, it could be a very long haul. So it is, you know, if you're considering it, it's not worth holding off waiting to see what the challenges are going to be like, because that could be, you know, years down the road, depending on what they do. But why don't you, as we're getting ready to wrap up, can you just kind of give a few points about what sort of makes a good arbitration agreement?
Sure. So, you know, even before Viking River, you still needed to, you know, minimize any grounds for potential procedural or substantive unconscionability. You need to make sure that you establish that both sides have agreed to arbitrate, and that includes obtaining the proper signatures. And if you're using e-signatures, as many companies are today, you know, you need to make sure those mechanisms are solid and tight and subject to, you know, surviving a challenge. You need to make sure there's language in the arbitration agreement that addresses consideration and mutuality. You know, the agreement has to be binding on both the employer and the employee equally. And then, you know, there's also specific language that could be considered in light of Viking River. You know, you might want to include individual PAGA claims in the covered claims section to make it clear that even if you can't move forward with a representative PAGA claim, you know, make it clear for Viking River, the employee can still pursue PAGA claims on an individual basis. You know, remove any language that suggests you can't bring a PAGA claim at all, or avoid that language. And then include a strong severability clause, because that was a key factor in the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Viking River. You know, that if any portion of the class or representative action waiver is found to be unenforceable, whatever enforceable provision there is that remains shall be enforced in arbitration. Those are the key factors. So I just wanted to quickly touch on what, you know, employers could do if they have existing arbitration agreements. First, you would want to take a look at the language to make sure it meets, you know, just the general requirements for having a valid and enforceable arbitration agreement. But you also want to make sure it has those severability provisions and some of those other Viking River specific provisions that I just mentioned. You know, before an employer undertakes, you know, just a total new rollout of the arbitration agreement, you know, in terms of updating or revising, there's a big administrative burden associated with that. There's, you know, potential employee relations issues to consider. If you're having existing employees sign arbitration agreements, you know, the company needs to consider, do we just roll it out for new employees and not the existing employees? What are the pros and cons? So we're not necessarily suggesting that everybody run out and start redoing their existing arbitration agreements, but it's something to consider talking to counsel about to discuss what the best approach is.
Well, Connie, that's our show. We're running out of time. Thank you so much for joining us, for coming back and sharing your thoughts on this important case. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Happy to be back. I could go on and on about this, but I know our time is up and I want to be respectful of everyone's schedule. So it's great being with you, Teresa. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. We'll just have to have you back. That's all.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
Thank you so much. You can learn more about Connie and Jackson Lewis by visiting www.jacksonlewis.com/people/Connie L. Chen. You can also connect with Connie via our website at workplaceperspective.com. I want to also thank our listeners, My Radio Angels, James and the Knave at Night, and Workplace Perspective's team extraordinaire, our engineer and producer, Paul Roberts, our associate producer, Melissa DeLacy, with music provided by the very talented Stephen Versaloni. Thank you all for joining us on Workplace Perspective, and until next time, keep raising the bar.